Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's wonderful to be here with you this Sabbath to spend time together on this holy time. I hope you all had a wonderful feast wherever you were. We had a wonderful time in Florida. And I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I want to start off by asking a question this afternoon. It's a very simple, but I think a very profound question at the same time. The question that we need to ask ourselves is really something we need to ask ourselves every day of the year, every moment, and always think about it every second. It doesn't really matter whether we're a young Christian, we're new in the faith, or whether we've been in the faith for, 40, 50, 60 years or more. The question is this. It's simple. The question is, what is your focus? What is your focus? Your focus will tell so much about you. It'll tell so much about your love. It'll tell you about your affections. It will tell you about your desires, your motivations. But it will also help you get through some of the toughest times in your life. I'd like to spend some time in Philippians chapter 1 today and look at the words of the Apostle Paul to the Philippians. And, of course, these were written to the Philippians, but they're written to us today as well. They're written down for us to learn from so we can read as well. You know, there are various times in our life where there are circumstances that can be used by Satan to distract us, to derail us, to disrupt our focus on the kingdom of God. And now, maybe more than ever, today, we all need to have focus on what's most important in our lives. We need to take stock of that and make adjustments. We need to make corrections and we need to realign ourselves with what God has planned for us. There are many trials or circumstances in our lives that we can blame on ourselves. For instance, let's say that you are cleaning something with some turpentine and you put the turpentine on the edge of the table and you didn't put the lid back on it and you reach over to grab a paintbrush and you reach back over and you knock that turpentine off. And down it goes, that freshly cleaned suit that you had just put on that china cabinet, all over the suit. And as it goes down that china cabinet, you thought, man, I should have put that suit away. I should have done that, and I forgot. And as it runs down onto the floor, it starts to puddle around that circuit breaker, that electrical outlet on the floor that you said, I need to change that to a GFI one day, and you just never did. And then it explodes into fire, and it catches that china cabinet up on flames. And as you turn to run to get into the corner where you were supposed to have the fire extinguisher, but you just never had time to put it up, you just never did it. And you almost trip over the rug, you said, I gotta put the edge of that rug down, or it's gonna kill me one day, and it almost does. And then you realize, well, it's in the garage, so you run out in the garage, and you're looking for that fire extinguisher, and you realize, well, it's under that pile of stuff I was gonna take to Goodwill 6 months ago, and I never did. So as you're grabbing under that, all of that stuff to try and find the fire extinguisher, and you finally do get it, and you get back inside, the flames are all the way to the ceiling. And then you have nothing to do but call the fire department, get out of the house. These are things that we bring upon ourselves because we should have done X, Y, and Z. God could have arrested at any time, I understand that. But there are circumstances we bring upon ourselves. That's not necessarily what I'm talking about. We could think about those things as we go through today. There are other trials that come upon us that come on us from the outside that we didn't have a hand in creating. For instance, maybe the big windstorm comes along and it blows down that tree that you didn't know had weak root system. And it blows it over right on your roof. And it breaks the roof in and the rain floods your house. Maybe someone sets fire to your business. Or the diagnosis of cancer comes back. Things we don't have control over. And we could go on and on and on about these different scenarios. But how is it possible to keep focus when it seems that the world is spinning out of control? When it seems like all the circumstances that you find yourself in, you have every reason to be grumpy and on edge and upset and short-tempered and disappointed and discouraged. How do we maintain focus? You know, it would seem reasonable to feel upset. It would be normal, it seems, to have a woe-is-me attitude. I mean, circumstances happen to everybody. They happen to you, and then you can't help but how you feel. This is how you feel in the circumstance. And then you think, well, if the circumstance would just go away, then I would feel better. And then my feelings would change. That seems normal. That seems reasonable when we think about it. But we know that the proverb says this. It says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So thoughts are something that we have control over. Emotions are something we should have control over, because we're told to bring every captivity into the thought, every thought into the captivity of Jesus Christ. And we're told not to let emotions that are destructive, that are inflammatory, like anger, to get out of control. We have to express power over these things, over these emotions, and not to let emotions express power over us, because it drags us down. So if we think, well, we can't help how we feel, I think, well, what are we to say to the homosexual when they say, well, that's just how I feel? Those are the feelings that I have. Am I supposed to suppress those feelings? What do we say to the alcoholic? I just have those feelings where I just need to have that drink. What do we say to the man who's addicted to pornography? Well, those are just deep feelings that they have. What do we say to the rapist, the murderer, the thief? All of these emotions that flood in them before they do these acts. They're all overwhelming emotions that they have. What would your emotions be, brethren, if... And you think about some other countries that we could live in, thankfully that we don't live in, under communist rule, for instance, and you were caught doing something that they didn't think was right, and you were lashed over and over again. What if you were beaten with a rod? They do a lot of beatings with rods over in some of these third world countries overseas. What kind of person would you be? What if you were on a boat at sea and it capsized? What if it broke apart? What if you were on the Titanic and it went down? And all you had to do, you could just cling to the lifeboat. What if it happened over and over again? And you capsized in a boat over and over again? You had nothing to drink, nothing to eat, just to hold on until you were rescued. What kind of person would you be? What if you had to sleep outside in the cold? What if your clothes were torn from you from robbers? What if you were beat up by thugs and you were left for dead? They thought you were dead and they left you. What if you were robbed over and over again? What if you were falsely imprisoned? What kind of a person would you be? Would you be angry at the world? Would you be angry at those people around you? What if that happened to you over your whole life? What kind of a person would you be? Would you be vindictive, harsh, short-tempered? All of these things happened in the life of the Apostle Paul. All of them did. But those emotive responses to his circumstances were not how Paul responded. I'd like you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, I want to read through this section here. This lists many of the afflictions that Paul went through in his life, the afflictions that he endured. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 24, it says this, "Of the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes save one. 3 times was I beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, often, because he had to, in cold and nakedness." All of these things Paul experienced in his life. But you know what? Paul didn't blame Satan for these things. He didn't blame Satan for the bad things that were happening to him. Now, he did say the messenger was Satan, was sent for his eyes. He was responsible for that. He did say that, and we know that Satan bears culpability for all sins that have been committed by mankind. But that really isn't relevant to the focus that we need to have in our lives. Well, if it weren't for Satan, well, it's Satan's fault. We can blame Satan for just about everything and anything we want to. There was a comedian that many of you might remember back in the 1970s. His name was Flip Wilson. And he had a comedy show, a variety show on TV. And he would portray certain characters on his television show, stereotypical characters like Freddy the Playboy, among others, who he could be pretty offensive. But one of his most popular characters was Geraldine. And she, and I'll say she in quotes because he dressed up like a woman to play Geraldine, but she would wear these sort of yellow-green stockings and her hair was always perfect and she demanded respect from her listeners. She was very, very vocal. And the one-liners that Flip put in her mouth became national household sayings, like, when you're hot, you're hot. You remember that? But the favorite Wilson quip was one that Geraldine used to say when she was rationalizing bad behavior. She'd suddenly look demure and she'd say, the devil made me do it. The devil made me do it. It became very popular. You know, when we look at Paul and what he wrote to the Philippians, Paul didn't go into some deep discourse about how great life would be if it weren't for these things that had happened to him. If it weren't for the Romans, If it weren't for those Greeks, they just won't let me go. No, he didn't blame others. He didn't complain about all the fun he was missing out on because of his circumstances. Paul had focus. He had focus through it all. And of course, it's not to say that we are going to be that way at all times. We're going to be sad at times. We're going to cry at times. These are normal and rational human emotions, and stress can overwhelm us. We're still fleshly. But those things should not consume us. They shouldn't consume our lives, so it moves us into a different direction. You see, Paul had been through the ringer in his life over and over and over again. And here was a man who had been called by God. He was taught by Christ, personally taught by Christ in the wilderness. And then, at some point in his life, he was hammered. He was hammered with trial. Trial after trial after tribulation after tribulation. So what is it that Paul is going to tell the Philippians from prison as he writes this book? He's in prison in Rome, and written about 62 AD, and he's awaiting his decision. Is he going to live or is he going to die? Philippians chapter 1. Turn to Philippians chapter 1. And let's start off reading the first two verses here in Philippians. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 1. Paul and Timothy, the servants of Jesus Christ, to all the saints in Christ Jesus, which are at Philippi, with bishops and deacons. Grace be unto you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. So here we have a greeting from Paul of grace and peace unto you. Now that is a pretty upbeat way to start a book from a man who is in prison. He doesn't start out, for instance, my brethren, circumstances here are dire. My bonds rub my ankles, cutting my flesh as my spirit is diminishing. I mean, reasonably, he could start it that way, couldn't he? He was undergoing those things, but he didn't. See, Paul was exhibiting focus. And so the question we have to ask ourselves, brethren, is where is our focus? Where is our focus? Is our focus upward? Is our focus outward? Or is our focus inward? I'm going to suggest to you that if the focus is inward, we're going to lose the battle every time. We'll lose it every time. Focus is the key. There is tremendous power in focus. And when you take the circumstances in life and then you choose to look at them from a particular vantage point, that dictates how you're going to feel. What vantage point? How are you going to view those circumstances in life? Circumstances, you add perspective to it, and it produces how you handle the circumstances or your experience in it. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. I want you to think about that almost like an equation. You know, you take circumstances, perspective, and that sort of equals how you're going to experience life. How you're going to experience what you're going through. Because, brethren, in most cases, you have no control over the circumstances in your life. You have no control over them. Things in life just happen to you. Things in life just happen to me. And as much as you prepare, that flat tire may happen when you're on your way to that big interview. And there's nothing you can do about it but just get out and change the tire. You know, when you're standing at the altar, and just as you say, I do, a bird flies over and decides to relieve itself. You can't do anything about that. There is nothing you can do about it. You see, in most cases, you have absolutely no control over your circumstances, but what you do have control over is how you look at them, how you respond to them, how you handle them, and the way you choose to respond to that circumstance in your life. What is our attitude going to be? You see, God has given us the wonderful freedom of choice in life, and it really is a choice. How do we look at things? That's your choice. How do you choose to look at things? How do you choose to look at your circumstances in your life? You know, looking at circumstances that you can't control through the lens of God will put you in a whole different attitude than looking at the same thing from your own lens. It's usually a negative way of looking things when we look at it our own lens, because when we see things with our own eyes, we see things that seem helpless, we seem lost, which leads to despair, it leads to depression, it leads to hopelessness. And when you get to hopelessness, you're done. That's the end of the road. If there's no hope, you're over. But having God's eternal perspective will give us the ability to have joy and no matter what comes at us in life. So the question becomes, how can you and I develop the kind of perspective on life that regardless of our circumstances, we can still experience the joy that God wants us to experience in this life? And you know the answer. It's focus. The answer is focus. What do we focus on when circumstances come into our life that is out of our control and that is difficult? Even when life is hard, even when things happen that hurt, even when relationships are troubled, and everybody has relationship problems, how do we handle them? When things seem to be breaking apart, when work isn't going right, when marriage is not working out the way that you think it should be, when a parent is ailing, everyone will go through this at some point, or something is very painful and very difficult, where is our focus? Where's our focus? Because wherever it may be, God says, wherever we're at, I should say, God says you can have joy in that. You can have joy and peace in that circumstance in your life, if only you will allow it. So how did Paul do it? How did Paul do it when he was sitting in prison? He's sitting in prison waiting for his decision on life or death. How did he do it? God's going to show us how Paul did it. But it's not so that we can leave here today and say, oh, that's neat. That's really neato that Paul did that. And then just kind of forget about it. No, he wants us to take it to heart. Okay, here's how he did it. Now here's how we need to do it. Let's take it and put it into practical exercise. God says, move from this academic perspective, and now it's your turn to do the practical. So this is how Paul did it. This is how we're going to do it as well. This is how you're going to experience joy. This is how you're going to find joy in the midst of circumstances, in the midst of adversity, even when you're struggling financially, even when things are going on in your life that just don't seem right, when your kids aren't doing well, when your mom or dad are getting sicker, and you don't know how to care for them. What is going on in your life right now? What is going on right now that you feel like, well, if you would just remove this problem, if you would just take that out of the way, then all would be wonderful. Then I would be happy and content, and everything would be great. God shows us in verse 3, Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3, what's the very first thing to do here? The very first thing to do is to get an upward focus. Get an upward focus. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3, let's read through verse 6. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, for you all making request or prayer with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he which has begun a good work in you will perform it or complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. So Paul is thankful. He's thankful. For what? He says, I'm thanking God for what? For every memory of you. So this is an upward focus to God and an outward focus to the Philippians. Actually, this is a very tender, this is a very intimate statement that Paul is writing to the Philippians. I thank God for every memory that we have together. Every time I pray, he's saying, you know, it's with pure joy of the time that we spent together. From the time, you know, that he met Lydia when he first came to Macedonia there, down by the riverside. I thank God for those times that we shared together. We went back to her house and we talked about the word and we learned about the gospel together. And more were baptized and brought into the truth. And even now, you know, with them sending Epaphroditus to him, he's very thankful for that. He's focused on the memories that he has with them in the past and that he's also gaining at this particular time. You know, you think about the joy that you have with people in times past, and it changes your perspective. You know, anytime that someone dies, it's inevitable that you'll begin to reminisce about the joyful times that you had with them in their lives. You're thankful for the memories that have been created over the lifetime of knowing them, of being together with them, of the fun times with them. And that's what Paul is doing. I thank God for every remembrance of you, every memory I have of you. So you see that Paul's focus is first upward. He's focused upward and he's focused outward. You know, I don't read anything here about being in chains. I don't read anything about how bad it is in prison. I don't read about how bad the food is, how horrible the Romans are treating him, or how about, you know, people aren't caring for Paul. He has focus. He's thinking upward. He's thinking outward. I'd like to look at three key words here in this section. Three key words. And the first one is this. The first word is thank. It's thank. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. So this begins with a choice. Really, everything begins with a choice, doesn't it? Adam and Eve were presented with a choice. We all have choices that are presented before us. How are we going to choose? Every time a circumstance comes upon us, we're presented with a choice. How do we behave in that circumstance? What do we choose? Do we choose to complain and groan and moan and wail? Why me? And we've all been there. We've all been there. Why me? Why am I going through this? But really, and you've heard it before, the question, the answer is, why not me? Why not me? If I am in Christ, and I am one of His, and I am in His flock, then why not me? Why do I think that I am any better than Paul? Why do I think that I'm any better than the inner circle of Jesus Christ? James, Peter, and John. These three men underwent tremendous trials. Peter crucified, tradition has upside down. John was run through with a sword. John went through persecution, was exiled to Patmos. And then Paul here, who went through all of these things. These are disciples of Jesus Christ, taught by Him personally, loved by Him. Why do we think we're any better that He won't put us through the same things that He put His own friends through, His closest friends, which we are His friends? Yes, we need to make a choice in our circumstance, and the right choice is that we should be grateful, and we should be thankful. We should be thankful for all things. We should rejoice fully and have thanksgiving to God. Most times we're simply just going to have to say, God, I don't understand this. I don't understand why, but I'm thankful that You are with me. I'm thankful that You are doing something in me and that You're controlling this. Paul doesn't say, thank You. Now, get gone. And the thanks that Paul has are not in some void, or they're not in some vacuum either. Paul ties this thankfulness to God for what others have done for him. Also for the significant relationships that he's developed, because the Philippians were significant to God and they're significant to him. Paul was thankful for the relational memories of the Philippians. So listen, if your spouse comes down with some horrible disease, they get Alzheimer's, they get some other type of cancer, and you have to care for them, you thank God for the memories that you've developed with them. Thankful for those memories that you've developed with them over the course of your lifetime. If your spouse has a stroke, You know, you thank God for what you have in the past and for what you will have together in the future. Sharing with each other, being able to serve. You married for good times and bad. So we're thankful for whatever it is that God is putting us through or allowing us to go through. If our parent dies, we're thankful for the memories that we have of our parents. What we've, you know, those memories we've developed with them over the years. We're thankful for those things. You know, and if your five-year-old child or grandchild breaks that great china that you had, you're thankful for that little child and the memories that you're going to develop in the future. Now, you probably want to discipline them, not out of vengeance, but in the Lord. But be thankful for all things. And man, that is hard. I realize that. But be thankful for all of these things. You see, even in the storms of life, we have a choice to thank God in that time. And even something as gut-wrenching as the death of a child. How do you respond to that when your child dies? You know, families may have other children that they're still blessed with. They have to take care of. They have to be able to have a certain type of attitude, be able to do that. You have a spouse still that you're blessed with. You're thankful for those things. There are others that are impacted that are weak and they need care. They need love and concern. So we're thankful for those things. We have to be thankful for the very life that we have. And we're also thankful for the image that we're being transformed into because of those things that we're going through. And isn't that really what's most important? Of what God is making us into because of whatever it is? So there's always something to be thankful for. And that begins with a choice of living above our circumstances that we find ourselves in and focusing on those significant relationships that matter. That's what Paul did. From the very beginning, he focused on the Philippians. Your relationship is meaningful to me. If we choose to focus inwardly, brethren, everything will spiral out of control and we'll think that, what we have, actually we'll think of what we don't have rather than what we do have. And that just seems to be where human nature goes. We always think of the things that we don't have instead of what we do, and we'll focus on ourselves instead of others. And for Paul, it was the church at Philippi. He was focusing on them. The second word I want to focus on here is prayer. As he says, always in every prayer of mine. Always in every prayer of mine. So to have an upward focus, we have to pray. If you're going to have a relationship with God, then we have to have a discourse with him. There has to be prayer involved. And by the way, at some point, this prayer that we have, and when you're in dire circumstances, you're praying that you want to be removed from it, or something of that nature, that trial will be removed from you. But at some point, that prayer has to move from that that feeling of helplessness to a feeling of joy or of thanksgiving. You know, you can read through the Psalms and you can see prayers from David, and he often lamented what he was going through. But you notice at the end of almost every psalm, he ends with prayer, with praise and thanksgiving to God. It almost inevitably changes. It moves and it shifts, not only for what he's going through, but really shifts to the future of what God will do for him at some point. Those are the kinds of things we have to move even in our prayer. You know, it's difficult to think of others when we're struggling with something. It's difficult to have joy in our heart when we go through, when we go to God in trial. It's difficult to think about other people or other things because we're so focused on what we're going through. It's hard to focus on the blessings that we have when all we can do is we think about what's going on now. We've all been there. You've been there. I've been there. That's just part of the human condition. But when your whole prayer is about your own difficulties, your narcissism can spiral into a deep inward focus. And I'm not talking about a reflection where you step back and you look at yourself, almost apart from yourself. I'm talking about an inward focus that just puts you in a fog almost and engulfs you, and it brings you into a downward spiral so that an outward focus just simply disappears and then a depression sits over you. And that's kind of what will happen. You know, God doesn't always offer a way out of the circumstance, but he always offers a way through it. He will always offer a way through it, and it comes from a focus that is outward and that is upward. And as God is telling you and I through the Philippians, through Paul, as he writes to the Philippians, this is where I want you to go. I want you to go through this. I will take you through it. I will move you through it. And it makes me think of the psalm where it says something to the effect of, you know, as I walk, 1,000 may fall at my side, but, you know, it will not come upon me. So you have this idea that all of this stuff is happening around you, but you are protected with this cocoon so that you can move through this circumstance. He's saying, I want you to come to me. Make a choice to have an attitude of gratitude, thankfulness, and prayer so that I can draw you close to me. And I want you to notice what type of attitude Paul has in this. What type of attitude does he have? He has confidence, and that's the third word here, confident. Being confident of this very thing in verse 6. As Paul is confident, being confident of this very thing, that he which has begun a good work in you, not around you, not in your circumstances, but in you, will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Paul said that he is confident that God will complete it. God will finish it. He will put the icing on the cake. He will put the cream on the latte. He will put the cherry on the top. He will complete that work. And the reason that Paul can make that statement is because he had such devoted focus in his life. And he knew that God was in control, not only of his life, but he knew that God was in control of all those Philippians. But even in his life, he knew that God was there in the shipwrecks. He knew that he was there in the beatings. He knew that he was there in the starvations. Paul knew that. He knew that God was with his crown jewel, even the Philippians. They were the crown jewel to Paul. And that he would not forsake them. And God didn't forsake Paul and all the bad things that happened to him. And Paul understood that. He knew that he was being molded. He was being shaped. He was being chiseled. He was being... what's another word? He was being, made into something that was going to be the image of Jesus Christ. He knew that that was happening. So listen, life may seem out of control at various times. You may seem very on top of things at certain times in your life. And there are times when you're going to feel life just seems out of control. But that's just the way you and I look at it. It's really not that way. And it may be out of our control. It may be out of our control, but that's just not the way it is. You see, when circumstances are so bad that you feel life is spinning out of control, let me ask you a question. Do you think you had control over the circumstances before? Do you think you had control over all the circumstances that could happen in your life before? Now I want you to really think about that. Do we control everything that happens to us? In most cases, we don't control almost anything that happens to us. The only thing that we really control, brethren, is how do we respond? How do we respond when that bird relieves itself on our head? When we get the flat tire, how do we respond in those circumstances? Really, we just say, God, you know, I'm on the ride that you put me on, and I'm going to enjoy everything about it. It doesn't really matter what it is. That's a hard thing to do, I know. But that's really the way we have to look at things. We say, God, you know how fast I can go. You know how slow I can go. You know how much the turns I can take. You know what time to get there. You're leading me. You're bringing me along. You know, if you've ever ridden a roller coaster, I'm assuming almost everybody's ridden a roller coaster in here. When I was younger, I was terrified of roller coasters because I thought I almost fell out of one as a kid. And I may have, I don't remember, but the perception was there. So I was terrified of roller coasters. And then finally, one day, I just decided I was going to go ahead and ride them. And I really had a good time riding roller coasters. But if you've ever ridden a roller coaster, maybe for the first time, there's this fear that overwhelms you sometimes when you get on this roller coaster. And you'll know that once you get on that thing and you say, oh, and you just sit back and you relax and you tell yourself, you know what? I'm going to trust that the builder of that roller coaster knew what he was doing. I'm going to trust that it's going to take me safely from the beginning to the end. And it may have some ups and downs and some twists and turns, but I believe and I trust that the builder made it the way it's supposed to work. And when you do that, the roller coaster ride isn't too bad. It's actually pretty fun. And you can be thankful for a lot of things even when you're screaming. You can be thankful for the wind blowing through your hair on the hot winter day, or summer day. You can be thankful for the pictures you have of your friends screaming as you're clicking, you know, or the video. I had a brother-in-law take a video one time. We were going on a roller coaster. And all the memories that you make with your friends on the roller coaster. You can be thankful for those things. But if you work yourself up into trepidation, roller coaster in life, the what ifs, the I can'ts, the I'm not sure's, the, you know, the what's going to happen, and you focus completely inwardly, it's the worst thing that happens to you. You can get off that roller coaster and say, I'm never going on that again. We have to have confidence that God is setting the compass of our inner spiritual life and making you and I more and more like His Son every day, even when things seem to go crazy, even when things seem to be out of control. Do we trust Him? Do we let Him have all of us? Do we give everything to Him? You know, God allowed everything to be taken away from Job, and then He restored it again, twice over, twice over. God can restore broken relationships in your life. God can turn your kids around. He can bring about all sorts of blessings that we never even expected at some point. And those restorations are always something to have hope for as we look to God. But the primary focus that we have to have is just focus upward and focus outward. And leave all the rest to God. Because like Paul, sometimes you don't get out of prison unless it's to die. Now, that's okay. That's okay. Because it really matters not, because the joy that is set before us is what, brethren? The joy that is set before us is the attainment of our goal, is the attainment of the kingdom of God. It's the attainment of His righteousness and becoming that express image of the righteousness of Jesus Christ. That's what we look for. And Paul said, you know, to die is gain and to live is Christ. He had a positive viewpoint from it. Didn't matter what happened to him. So even in all the seeming turmoil, there is focus. You know, there's a movie that, I don't remember what year it was from, back in the maybe 90s, but it's a movie that I kind of enjoy. It's called For Love of the Game, I believe. It's a movie starring Kevin Costner. It's a baseball movie, and it's about a veteran pitcher who's sort of at the end of his career, and he's trying to prove to everyone that he still has what it takes to make it in the big leagues. And there's one particular point in this movie as he's trying to pitch a game as he's starting off. Because I guess the problem with him was he let things get to him as he was moving on a little bit later in his life. And in this particular scene, you see the crowd as they're yelling. And this is all he hears. And the bullhorns and the that are going off and the whistles that are blowing from the crowd and the insults that are hurled at him. And he hears the coach of the other team that's yelling at him. And he sees the batter as he's getting up there and he's staring him down. And what Kevin Costner is character is focused on is everything but what he should be focused on. He focused on everything else. And he developed this technique that when he got there, he'd look around and he'd see it all and all the noise was there. And then he'd say, clear the mechanism. And everything just whoop, narrowed down. And all of a sudden it got quiet. And he didn't hear anything. He didn't care about the batter. He didn't care about the coaches. He didn't care about the stands and the opposing team. All he was focused on was the glove of the catcher. And when he did that, he threw strikes. And he threw strike after strike after strike. Brethren, if you and I want to throw strikes all day long in the rest of our life, we have to clear the mechanism. Ignore all the noise that goes on around us and focus on the things that matter. Get a clear focus. Thank God for what He's doing. Thank God for Him caring about us so much. And that He chose to treat us just like He treated His Son and those that went before us with trial and tribulation. You know, when kids go to foster homes, the way that they feel like they're part of the family is when they're treated just like the blood kids. When they're disciplined just like them. There's no special treatment because they realize that there is love in discipline. Thank God for the relationships and the memories that you have and the growth of others in the gospel. Pray for others for strength, for comfort, for peace, and develop an attitude of confidence, real belief and faith that God will not leave you. And you see, we can't let emotions control us. Emotions, yes, are part of being human, and they're needful, actually. They're very necessary. Studies have shown that if you don't have emotions, you can't make decisions. It's a very strange thing. Emotions are necessary, but we can't let them put us on the wrong path. And that's the key. Let them take us over in our life. So moving further down in Philippians now, Paul says that an upward focus isn't enough. And we've already talked about this a little bit, but he's showing us that an outward focus is necessary as well. In verse 7, he says, "Even as it is right for me to feel this of all of you, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you are all partakers of my grace." He's saying that we've experienced the grace of God even through the midst of all the adversity. They shared even in his bonds. And he's saying, "You're in my heart. I love every one of you." And I want you to listen to this next line. It's really one of the most interesting verses here when we think about it. Verse 8, "For God is my record," or bears record, "how greatly I long after all," or how "I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ." Now, this is a very, very tender, very loving, very intimate statement. Can you imagine saying something so intimate to a group of people? Paul is writing this. He's not writing this to his mother. He's not writing this to his wife or his family or kids. He's writing this to the Philippians. This is very loving and very tender. Paul is so filled up with care and concern for other people that he didn't have time to be concerned and sorry for himself, even as he was sitting there in prison. I want you to look at five words. You can circle them. You can just kind of note them or pay attention to them. But they kind of bring back to life again the message of this portion of the paragraph. The first one is, "I feel, even it is right for me to feel as all of you, all of you. Heart, because I had you in my heart. The third is partakers, which is an interesting word which means connected or interwoven together. The fourth is long, I long for you. And the fifth is affection. Where is his focus? Difficult circumstances reveal our true affections. And when God allows the vice of difficulty and pressures to come upon us in our life, what comes out is really where our true affections are. What comes out of us? You know, in order to make that great tasting wine, you have to squish the grapes. You've got to break them, right? And they have to be crushed. And then out spills that juice that makes that great wine. And when the Apostle Paul was in chains and he was in prison and he was being beaten up and he was awaiting execution, what spilled out of Paul's heart? What spills out of him? A longing, a feeling. There's a love, there's a partaking, there's affection. And he's focused on the Philippians. He's focused on them. So the question is, where is your focus? Where is your affection? Where is all of ours? Where are we focused on? Sometimes God allows adverse circumstances. He allows tough times. Whenever it, you know, whatever it may be, to make great people. You want to make great wine by crushing grapes. You make great people by putting them under a little bit of duress. Little bit of duress. If you want to find out how good somebody really is at something, you press them. You push them. You try to push them to the limit. And then what comes out of it, you say, "Wow, that really is something." When they really push them in the military, in basic training, they push them hard. They weed out the ones that can't take it. And you find something that comes out that is really fantastic. You can say, "Wow, I didn't even know that was in there until you pushed them." till you pushed them. Great people are those who know what really matters, and they commit their lives and their time and their energies to what really matters. And I'm standing here in front of a bunch of great people. You all know what really matters. You know, you think about what Jesus said to his disciples when he was there at the Passover. He said, "Happy are you if you do these things. Happy are you." You know, when the world seems to be spinning out of control, stop, take a breath, get an upward focus. Get an upward focus. Make the choice of gratitude and take the action of prayer and add confidence in God's sovereignty and get an outward focus and begin to live your life for others. And you won't think about yourself as much anymore. What can I do to serve others? What can I do? And it can begin right here today, right now. What can I do to serve others? What can I do at church to serve others? What can I do to help someone, even if it's just a little thing? Even if it's just a lighten the load, just a little bit. What can I do for someone else here even today? There's a movie called Groundhog Day. If you've ever seen this movie, Groundhog Day, Bill Murray stars in it with Andy McDowell. And Bill Murray wakes up. He's going out to report on the story of Punxsutawney Phil. And, you know, is winter going to continue for 6 more weeks or not? And so as he goes out there with his crew, he's one of the reporters that stands in front of the camera, obviously. I think he's a weatherman. Yeah, that's what he is. He's a weatherman. And he wakes up the first morning on Groundhog Day, and the first thing he hears is his radio turns, he sees it turns to 7 o'clock, and he hears Sonny and Cher singing, "I Got You, Babe." And so he gets up and he goes about his day, and he's just dying to get out of Punxsutawney. He wants to get back into the city. But as he goes to bed that night, and he wakes up the next day, you see the clock turn to 7, and you hear the music by Sonny and Cher, "I Got You, Babe," playing again. And it plays this way every morning, over and over and over again. And he's stuck in the same day, Groundhog Day. And probably for years, I'm guessing it's years, many, many years. Because what you see throughout this movie is you see him as he... Well, he's very frustrated and upset, but then he realizes, you know what? I can do some very selfish things and get away with it. First, he tries to kill himself, and he realizes he can't do that because he wakes up the next morning. And then he thinks, well, I can rob banks and get all this money, and so he starts stealing money. And he starts eating as many donuts as he can possibly stuff in his mouth and doing all of those things that he always wanted to do but knew he couldn't. And he realizes at some point that that wasn't bringing him any joy in his life, in this daily routine that he was going through. And then he starts to help people. And then as he helps people throughout the movie, on each day, he develops a routine. And he starts seeing people he can help. But he was helping people to get praise. So it was all very selfish even at that time. But then as the movie progresses on, he becomes very outwardly focused. And he begins helping people because he feels the joy in it, in helping others to have joy themselves. And he becomes very selfless. And so finally at the end, one of the things he was doing, by the way, throughout the movie was he's trying to seduce this woman, which he never could do, but he develops a relationship with her over these probably years where she becomes he really falls in love with her and he develops a close relationship with her. And one night they fall asleep, just laying in the bed, nothing was happening, but just laying there. And then he wakes up the next morning and it turns to 7, and the music's actually, I think the music is a little bit different, if I remember right. And he wakes up and he's now at the day after Groundhog Day. And he turns to his newfound love, and one of the best lines of the movie is he says, "What can I do for you today?" He became totally and completely outwardly focused. And upward and outward focus will completely and totally transform your life. It won't transform your circumstance. That's not going to change. But it will transform you. And really, that's the only thing you and I have control over. So the principle that I suggest out of this passage is that our focus will always follow our affections. And our focus is the key word, always following our affections. Now, at this point, I hope you're thinking, yes, this is the life that I want to cultivate even more than I have today. This is what I want to do. I want to learn how to pray for others like this. I want to have an upward focus and an outward focus, but you know, I'm really not sure how to do that. I'm not sure how to change what I'm doing to make it better. Well, in verses 9 through 11, the Apostle Paul is going to tell us how to pray. He's going to tell us that he prayed for the Philippians, and in turn, he prays for us from the past. And you're going to see that in his circumstances, he's maintaining an upward and an outward focus. So in verse 9, you're going to hear his request. In verse 10, you're going to hear the reason for his request. And in verse 11, you're going to hear the resource for the basis of his request. So look at verse 9. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 9. He says, "In this I pray that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment." So this is his request for them and for us, that our love may abound in knowledge and judgment or discernment. See, he loves these people, and he loves these people so much that what he wants for them just spills out of him like juice from the grape. He prays that their affections, the things that matter most to them, that their desires, their motivations are expressed. Where is he asking God to direct it? There are two things that are mentioned. He prays that their love may abound more and more in two things. First, in knowledge, he says. Now, this is an interesting Greek word for knowledge. It's not an intellectual knowledge of God. That would be a different Greek word. But this Greek word means knowing God on a deep, personal level through experience. What is your experience with God? That is the knowledge that he's talking about here. It's a knowledge that comes from time with God, of interacting with God, of having that upward focus, of having that time that you spend with him in meditation and prayer and reading in his scriptures. A true knowledge of him, of knowing God deeply and very personally. And so he says, "I pray that your love and your affection would be not towards your circumstances working out." He doesn't say that, but that you would know that you would know him in an intimate and a very deep, personal, loving way. More than anything else. And then number two is, "I pray that all discernment." Now, that's a word that means the ability to know what is true and to know what is right. It means the ability to determine basically between right and wrong. He wants them to have discernment. And so Paul's request is that our affections will be shifted to know God in a deeply personal way and to have a kind of discernment that we know what is good, what is bad, what's right, what's wrong, and how to make those choices. Now here's the key phrase, and it's a small one. So that. He's going to give the reason why he prayed and why that we should pray for these things. Philippians 1 verse 10, the first part. "So that you may approve things that are excellent." So you may approve things that are excellent. So why does the Apostle Paul want you to know and long to know God so deeply? So that you can approve of the things that are excellent, those things that are right, moral and just. He wants us to know God so deeply, so intimately, that we can discern what's right, what's wrong, that we can approve those things that are morally correct. And the word approve really means to test metal, means to test something. You know, if you have a piece of gold or silver, there's a way to approve it. There's a way to test that. I think years ago they used to try and bite it. And if it dented a little bit, you knew that there wasn't an alloy. There wasn't some hard base metal in there. Because gold is a little bit softer than some of the alloys. That's the testing. Now, there's scientific ways to test to see whether it's gold or silver or whatnot. But this is what he's saying here is, how do you test to see if this is authentic? The word approve means to test or to examine. So he's saying that once you understand who God really is and you understand the difference between right and wrong, then circumstances that we're in, opportunities, businesses, relationships, you know, you'll be able to know what to do in those circumstances. What do you do? What do you choose? How do you choose what's right and what's wrong? You know, should we see this movie? Should we send our kids to this school? Should we live in this neighborhood? Should we live in this city? All of these things, we have a better sense of knowing. Because this ability of deeply knowing God and knowing what's right and what's wrong, and what he prays is that this will really give us the ability to test everything that comes in our life. Now the next verse is gives us the ultimate purpose. Is it to be in order to be sharp, to be quick, to be smart in everything we do so that everything works out in our favor? Is that what Paul is telling us? No. Actually, it's the second part of verse 10 here. He says that it's in order that you may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ. In other words, let your character be blameless. Because of the choices you make, let your character be blameless until the return of Jesus Christ. Do you know what the word sincere means? Sincere means tested by sunlight. Now, it's kind of the idea that, you know, you have sliding glass doors or windows in your house, and, you know, maybe in the evening you clean those windows or doors off really good with some Windex or whatever you may use, and you think, yeah, that thing looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. And then you wake up in the morning, and then the sunlight streams through that door or that window, and you say, man, that looks awful, because you see all the streaks, because now that is being tested by sunlight. Is it sincere? So when light comes upon us, that's the testing. Then truth comes in. That's being tested by this truth or this light. Paul says that he wants you to know and long to know God so deeply that we know the difference between right and wrong. We have the ability to judge, to make the decision. Where do I put my time? Where do I put my energy? My devotions in every situation so that, you know, we know what's excellent. We make the right choices. And then, when we do that, do what's excellent, it produces two things. It produces this purity or this moral purity in Christ, and it produces a holiness. It produces this, sincerity. It means that we live life as an authentic Christian. We live an authentic Christian life. And that is Paul's prayer for the Philippians. That's what he's praying for them. And that's what he's praying for us as well. That this is God's plan for you. This is his purpose and his working in us. Despite all of the things that we go through, sometimes fires will come in our lives and they will, we may have broken relationships and we're going to find ourselves in life and death situations or family members. And we're going to have pain and we're going to have hurt and we're going to have financial setbacks, most of us. And we may even have depression. And so what you and I have to do is we need to pray for people that go through those situations. We need to pray that God will cause their love to abound deeply in wanting to know him even more so that they're not focused and we're not focused on the circumstances that we're going through, but we draw closer to him to find that joy that is there. It's there. We have to find it. We have to understand that now is not forever. So he wants us to know the difference between right and wrong so that we can make good decisions, so that we become sincere, tested by the light of the word to see if our life will reflect who Christ really is. And then Paul gives the basis in verse 11 as we wind up here. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 11. Being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ unto the glory and praise of God. And so these fruits come into the vessel, which is you, by Jesus Christ living in you, Christ moving in you through the Holy Spirit. Him living his life in you. And he's saying, Paul is saying, look, I am praying that you'll have this deep desire to know God, and you'll understand what choices you need to make, because you'll know right and wrong, and this excellence will come into your life. And you'll find the joy that is set before you in whatever circumstance, and you'll be filled as a result with righteousness. You'll be filled to the full with righteousness because Jesus Christ is abiding in you and he's living his life again in you. Don't suppress him, brethren. Let him move in us. Let him live in us, and let's follow him because our actions always follow our thinking. And what you think will satisfy you, what you long for, the action of fulfilling that will always follow your thinking, and your thinking will always follow your focus. So brethren, when the good times come, and the bad times come, as they always do, where is your focus? Where's your focus? Let's take the advice of the Apostle Paul and Kevin Costner. Clear the mechanism. Focus ourselves. Focus upward and focus outward.